Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Lots of subjects covered. Daniel Shaver, update on that case, the horrible police shooting. Weinstein, lots of thoughts about that. Gergos weighs in, and a generally fantastic show. First, 8sleep.com. I just got my update on 8sleep. They tell you every night how you did. And I had a really bad night the other night because Lynette's side of the bed, my side of the bed got flip-flop because there was like a power outage or something, or Gary was programming my phone or some miscommunication. But I had a night that was like a 46, but last night was an 80, which I think is good. 8sleep, man. There's a lot of mattress ads out there. The pod by 8sleep's the only one to combine dynamic temperature regulation and sleep tracking. It's such a it's just a game changer, your temperature. And listen, my wife's temperature is different than my temperature, but it's what is best for her to sleep through the night. And mine's, of course, on a cooler setting. The stats say it all. Pod customers fall asleep faster, toss and turn 25% less, and have a 17% increase in deep sleep. And right now, get $150 off plus free shipping, 8sleep.com/doubt, E-I-G-H-T, sleep.com/doubt. Get some sleep, man, with 8sleep.
Just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from HDS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for a new month of Adam's Monthly Nut. Get ready because March's shipment is one of the best nuts yet. You'll get two hand-rolled Mark Garagos-approved cigars delivered in a custom wood box. A Did You Feed the Dog calendar, so you'll never forget to not starve your dog. A pack of Sabel's chocolate chip cookies. Four custom Delta Foo shot glasses so you can make the most of your day wasted. And, of course, a bottle of your choice. The $60 value is yours for only $25. Sign up for 1 month or keep the shipments coming. So prep your mail's box and get ready for Adam's Monthly Nut. Hurry, we will sell out.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagos and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on the church. Begin on mandate. Get it on. Welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Mark Garagos, who is in parts unknown, although we're going to know in about 4 seconds. Where are you, Mark?
Self-quarantined in Salt Lake City, Utah, awaiting, is on jury watch. My jury's out. We're waiting. They've been out since Thursday, sometime before noon, I'd say. I finished closing, and then prosecutor got up, and I had to endure his one-hour screed. Just, by the way, the hardest part of any trial when you're a criminal defense lawyer is after you've given your closing argument, and then the prosecution, because they've got the burden of proof, they go last. You have to sit there and endure what is the most excruciating thing as a lawyer is listening to another guy and you can't respond.
Right. And I know. And so much of it is untrue as well.
Right.
I want to thank ZipRecruiter, Upstart, 8sleep, Tommy John, and LegalZoom for sponsoring this program. I want to
thank them too. In these tumultuous times, they stand tall.
So for you, when do you suspect the jury will return a verdict on your? It's not a polygamy case, but we'll just call it that.
Well, this is an interesting thing. What's happening with the courts right now? I mean, it's fascinating to me. We're canceling sporting events. We're canceling all kinds of other public gatherings. But the one thing we're not canceling so far And they're trickling in. I'm getting orders from all over the country right now from various federal courts. They're starting to close down all non-essential hearings in most of the federal courts. But, you know, the jails are still loaded to the gills. The courts are still, a lot of the state courts are still operating where you've got what are called arraignment courts, where there may be 100, 200, 300 people and more who are congregated in very small areas, literally elbow to elbow, jostling around in the courts. If there's ever an opportunity for community spread, you would think that the courthouses and the jails would be the ground zero.
What's your take on the Weinstein sentencing? I think, obviously, we've always talked about Weinstein. I was speaking to A.J. Benza about it, who on my podcast, who was involved, knew many of the participants, and was fairly outraged that he was he got 19 years, I think, for oral copulation or oral rape or something like that with women who he was corresponding with and traveling with and so on and so forth. What's your take?
Well, the idea that he got 23 years, 20 years on the one count, 3 years consecutive on the other count. He's 67. He's in ill health. By the way, it has not been reported yet. Most people have reported that he went straight from the courthouse to Rikers. My understanding is he's no longer at Rikers. He's at Bellevue once again, and because he's got serious health issues. So this is a guy who demonstrably, at least the prison authorities believe that he's got health issues. And one of the things that was said, it has not been reported on, is that this very same judge on a first offender on another case in the same courthouse within the last year has sentenced another gentleman who actually either used a drug or alcohol, plied the woman with it, so it was non-consensual. He gave that first offender 7 years. And this was fairly recent. So you can tell what's happening here. I mean, you know, this is the poster child for a movement that wants a reckoning in spite of the fact that he was acquitted in the face of that of three of the five counts. And I understand that people, you know, that there is no sympathy or empathy for Harvey Weinstein. But at the same time, when you start trying to kind of playing to the crowd or playing to the mob, that's a very dangerous situation, because then that sends, that sets the outer parameter of what you can do. At that point, it's not so much about justice as it is appeasement.
Well, how can it not factor in if you're a human being, like we discussed in prior episodes when we were talking about the judge in the Stanford sort of rape case, who then was, you know, voided
out of office by that Stanford professor who deserves to be. If you ever want to see somebody who's the most intellectually bankrupt human on the planet, that would be it.
Right. And then ended up teaching tennis at a country club. And then they went after that and tried to get him ousted from that as well. So what I'm saying is if we're going to have social media and social warriors and movements, either professors or Me Too or Black Lives or whatever it is, PETA or whatever it is, driving things, and the judges are going to have to start factoring that in just because they're human beings. Like, who wants to be hectored? Who wants to be potentially injured? Who just from a family standpoint, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like you give Harvey Weinstein 23 years, and let's even forget it's Weinstein. You just give this guy who's being painted as a monster throughout the land. You give him. So here's what it is. The over under. Just tell me if you agree with this. The over-under is 7 years, right? This
Correct.
Guy is a world-renowned monster. You give him under 7 years, and you and your family can no longer go out to eat at a restaurant. You give him over 7 years, and you'll be a hero. So how's that going to work, big picture?
Well, I'll take it down so the judges don't think that we're picking on them. It's not. It goes down to the defense lawyer, Chris Darden. Chris Darden got off the case where the gentleman was charged with killing Nipsey Hussle.
Right.
And he couldn't, you know, he didn't want to expose his family to it. And I understand that. 20 years ago, I represented Scott Peterson. And, you know, my family and people who worked for me paid the price for that. And does it make me think twice when somebody who's reviled comes to me and wants me to represent him? And Adam, you've said many a time, and I don't disagree with you, I've got the thickest skin in the world. But at the same time, I still have empathy for those around me who work for me, who have to be collateral damage. Does that factor into what I think about? Yes. Does that arguably violate my oath as a lawyer that says I'm not supposed to consider, you know, extraneous factors or somebody who's reviled? Yeah. I mean, that's something that I have to sit and, you know, kind of ponder. Do I, you know, and I know some people say, oh, if the check is large enough, trust me, I've walked away from checks that most people would never walk away from for a variety of reasons. And that isn't the issue. It's, do you going to drag everybody around you through kind of this muck because, you know, they didn't sign up for it?
Well, here's an interesting thought, or at least I find it interesting. When you give jury instructions, and that instructions are not to read the newspaper or watch the local news or discuss the case. Sometimes you're sequestered, right? It's like, well, we have to put you all up in a hotel because there's too much out there. Okay, but what about judges? Because the judge, there's no doubt in my mind that the judge in the Weinstein company, now the judges are the ones who command that you don't read the newspaper, but the judge is reading the newspaper and the judge is looking at Twitter and the judge knows which way the wind is blowing socially. And the judge hears about all the victims and all that's going on and all the stories about what a monster the guy is. And then the judge is affected when he lays out the sentencing. Does that sound accurate?
Let me give you an example of that in action. I just mentioned Peterson. During Peterson, we had a judge who the Chief Justice of the then California Supreme Court, Ron George, had appointed. He was out of county. He was from Alameda County. His name was Al DeLucchi. He's now since passed away. And I have said before, and I will say it till I die, I had a very good relationship with him. He was almost an avuncular figure in my life, and I developed a great deal of fondness for him. But we used to joke that we wanted him sequestered because if he made a ruling that we thought was spot on in the afternoon, because usually the legal issues we would raise at the end of the day so we wouldn't waste the jury's time. By the time we came back the next morning, he would inevitably want to reconsider the ruling. And the joke was WWGS. What would Greta say? Because Greta Van Susteren had a program and she was doing the Peterson every single night. And if he got criticized on Greta, the next morning he would revisit the ruling. And it was, what would Greta say? Because, and it would always, DeLucchi would preface it with, you know, my wife had the TV on and I was walking by and I heard the pundits say blah, blah, blah. And so it got me to thinking that maybe, and then all of a sudden you'd revisit it because the crowds had said something different. And mind you, the pundits weren't in the courtroom. They didn't know what they were talking about, but that's what you were fighting against, which is one of the reasons I used to say that the biggest mistake I ever made in that case is I should have allowed, or I should not have argued against cameras in the courtroom. The prosecution didn't want cameras in the courtroom, and I went along with that, and that was a fatal mistake.
Because you feel like you could have changed public opinion if more people had been able to view it.
If people saw what I saw, they would never, ever have had the ill-formed opinions, or the opinions that they had would have at least been informed by facts as opposed to some bleach blonde former prosecutor who was pontificating 3,000 miles away and had no idea what they were talking about.
So let's now get a little more granular, and I'm glad you brought that up. Now, of course, you brought that up The Peterson case, that was in 2003? I don't know. When was that?
Yeah, 2003, 2004.
Okay. And that obviously before social media. So what's going on now is a perfect storm. So picture this. The folks that are in the courtroom are pundits, but they're not neutral observers. They want to put Weinstein's head on a pike, or whoever, Peterson or whomever, whatever, Cosby, whatever. So they.
I'll give you one thing. I'll interrupt for 1 second. The one consistent thing between Peterson and Weinstein, both cases, Gloria Allred represented somebody related to the case. Both cases, Gloria was in the courtroom. In both cases, Gloria was giving press conferences outside on the courtroom steps while the lawyers were muzzled. That's something that was consistent in both cases 17 years apart.
Right. So you have, and she hasn't aged a minute. And
she has not. She still looks spectacular.
So... It'll look good in the transcripts. That's all I know.
Exactly.
So I
you are Honor. your brain is should be preserved.
It'd be nice. I'm trying to pickle it every night.
And I'm living vicariously through you.
So here's this sort of perfect storm. You have the folks in the courtroom. They are listening, whether it's Weinstein or Peterson or whatever. They're hearing what's going on inside the courtroom. They're then going outside of the courtroom and putting their own flavor on what's going on in the courtroom because it's all passing through this filter of what exactly the movement is at the time. And you know, Me Too and the Scott Peterson thing were not too far apart in terms of what the ladies want to hear. So then everything they bring outside of the courtroom suggests this is what's going on. It doesn't reflect what's going on in the courtroom accurately. It's their PC version of what's going on, or their wishful version of what's going on in the court, not an accurate version. Then the world gets infected with that. The judge has to be infected or exposed to that as well. And then when it comes time to lay down a sentence, he has to be influenced by that. He just
It's like its own version of a media corona. I mean, it's really, in fact, I'm going to take it one step farther as to how it gets even worse. But first, let me tell you about something. LegalZoom, still early in the year. But if you run a small business, you know 2020 will fly. Use LegalZoom right now to make sure you're set up for success. For 19 years, LegalZoom has helped over 2 billion Americans start their businesses by incorporating, forming an LLC, and more. You want to know the truth, Adam? Just today, they wanted me to form an LLC for one of my entities, and I told them I'm not wasting my time. Go to LegalZoom. Do it there. And I could do it in-house for free. Why would I do that? Because after you're set up, LegalZoom can still help with costly hurdles that take time away from growing your business. I don't need to take some lawyer off of something else. I could have Zoom do it. And like lease agreements, tax laws, contract reviews, they've got it there. Don't reinvent the wheel. LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys and tax professionals also can provide the advice on all of these things and more. And guess what? You'll never get charged by the billable hour, the evil billable hour, since LegalZoom is not a law firm. Isn't that right, Gary?
That is right. Go to LegalZoom.com today and enter promo code DOUBT in the box at checkout for special savings. That's LegalZoom.com, code DOUBT, LegalZoom, where life meets legal.
So it is a
so
new...
So this is what I was going to say. Then that's when you've got... I don't even fault Gloria for going out and doing the press conference. I think... You know, she feels like she's doing what's in the best interest of her client. She's zealously representing him. But I do fault judges who then impose a gag order on the participants, because the participants have got a duty as well, the lawyers, to zealously defend their client. How can you let somebody who represents, in my case, Gloria is representing a witness. In other cases I've had, Gloria has represented the complaining witness. In Weinstein, she's representing somebody who is either a witness or a complaining witness. So if that's okay, and if the judge, both the judges in Weinstein and Peterson, took the position they could not muzzle her, okay, if that's your position, then why do you muzzle the participants, especially since the U.S. Supreme Court has already said that the lawyer, especially a defense lawyer, has got an absolute duty to zealously represent and to respond to things that are out there. What's particularly irksome is when people then listen to that one-sided, admittedly advocate's view, and they're sitting 3,000 miles away, in the case of Peterson, which takes place in California, and you're sitting in a studio in New York, and you're acting like you were in the courtroom as opposed to getting your information filtered through an advocate. And if you're not watching it on TV and you're not making your own judgment, then that to me is like a sophisticated game of telephone, or actually a polluted or toxic view of telephone.
Well, we're there now, and we're going to have to figure something out, because if a judge wants to go about their life, I mean, they're going to get doxxed. Now, if this, I'll just give you, you know, whenever I try to get at the truth, I just go the extreme. What if that judge in the Weinstein case said, 6 months, and I'm going to reduce 3 of the 6 for time served, then that person's life would be ruined, right?
If that judge had gone and given him and said the following words, he's a 67-year-old man, he has demonstrable health problems, I've looked at his medical records that have been supplied to me, he's got a crippling back injury, he's just had, at taxpayer expense, a stent implanted in his heart. He is going to be nothing but an expense to the taxpayers the entire time he's in there. By the way, he's been taken to Bellevue not once but twice during the very short period of time, also at an expense to the taxpayers. I would rather give him 1 year in custody and then subject him to house arrest, and not at a fancy mansion, but at a one-bedroom or studio apartment somewhere where he's monitored. That judge would be out of office within 6 months.
Right, and or family life ruined as well.
Family life ruined. They'd be protesting at his door like other cases we've seen. There would be protests. And probably attacks on the person. So right. There's no way to do it anymore. You just can't. It's really mob that becomes mob rule, and the mob does no longer have to be the majority. It's just the most vocal.
There's a case. I'm throwing you a curveball here, Gary, because it reminded me when you brought up Gloria Allred that she's representing a young man who went
your
to
alma mater.
Was it North Hollywood High?
It was.
Yeah, this is a Chinese fella?
Asian of some sort. I sent this to you last week, Mark. This was it was actually happening live a few minutes before we recorded.
She was having a press conference with this guy, and he went to North Hollywood, and of course I went to North Hollywood. And I guess the nuts and bolts was he coughed in class or something, and the teacher sent him to the nurse, and he's Asian. Right.
Right.
Now, yeah,
so we can almost write this story itself.
Right.
The story almost writes itself. Yeah.
Right.
Now, and let me guess. What did the school do wrong?
They allegedly he's Vietnamese, so they say, or so Gary says. And he was sent to the nurse's office or sent home or some version of that because of a coronavirus scare. Although this happened a couple of weeks ago before we were in full panic mode, but Gloria's representing him for obviously racial discrimination
because he was profiled as being Asian and coughing. Let me give you a hypothetical. If they had not done anything and this person turned out a week by right now. When did you send this, Gary? Last week? 2 weeks ago?
Correct.
So say right now. Yeah, fast forward right now. 10 of the other people became infected and in that classroom, and they had not sent this person to the school nurse or the medical facility, and those people had gotten infected. And one of those 10 people had walked into, I don't know, Lisa Bloom's office and said to Lisa, I want to sue the school because the school did not take adequate precautions. And I've now been self-quarantined and I've got damages because I've now got to take off from work because my kid who was in that class has been quarantined. And then the kid got seriously ill and there were hospital bills and they didn't have insurance. And then the next thing you know, their insurance had lapsed because the person had to take off and didn't have paid leave. And so therefore, their consequential damages were in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And notwithstanding the case of Howell, that do you think that Lisa Bloom or any other, we'll just say any other lawyer in town, would turn that case down? Or do you think they would file the 910 action which shortens the statute of limitations and sue the school for not taking action? What do you think?
Of course they take that case. And so
of course they take that case and they take it on contingency.
Well, first off, the school was Walter Reed Middle School. Junior High, which was my school I went to before I went to North Hollywood High. I'd heard a few different reports back and forth, but this is junior high. Secondly, so Mark, do these kind of cases get weaker as this thing turns into a pandemic, right? So how are you going to sell this case now? Like, hey, this kid coughed and we pulled him out of class and everyone is looking at each other going, well, then that teacher's a hero because of what we learned in the last 2 weeks, right? We're full-fledged DEFCON 5 now, right?
Yeah, and you know what you never see is the follow-up to many of these cases, which is the follow-up is somebody demurs to it if it's a state court action or if it's federal and they do what's called a 12B6. But they'll do a motion saying on the face of the complaint they haven't even made out anything. And 9 times out of 10, the case gets tossed right there. Before you've even had any discovery or anything else, some judge says this is the legal equivalent of this is the silliest thing I've ever seen.
Right. So we're trying to figure out. And what are they doing now? They're just trying to get money from LA Unified or what's...
LA Unified's never going to pay. Look, LA Unified doesn't pay when they're screwing people. They're certainly not going to pay when they're not. So, I mean, they LA Unified is... fights everything and anything. I mean, remember when I was suing them for teacher jails and everything else, it took a full-fledged frontal attack to ever get them to do the right thing in that case, including having to shame them into doing the right thing.
I don't know what they're doing as of this moment, but in a story from a few days ago, 4 days ago, Gloria Allred was quoted as saying they are not looking for monetary damages. They want an investigation.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. That was because they probably, you know, there's one of these things you can do in the law that when you file one of these cases, you can send out a letter under 128.7, which is for that alerts the other side that if you pursue this in the face of the law that clearly says that you got nowhere to go, that that's sanctionable.
I have a quote here from Allred, quote, the remedy we are seeking is a district-wide faculty and staff training about and prevention of racial and national origin discrimination arising from the coronavirus outbreak, unquote.
Well, you know what's interesting? I have received probably in the last 4 hours, at least 10 emails from various district courts around the country, not allowing any juror, litigant, or person to come into the courts if they've been to one of 7 enumerated countries, including China, South Korea, Iran. So what are you going to do? You're going to sue the court system because the court system is profiling people who've come from one of these enumerated countries?
We're really going off the crazy deep end super fast. And I blame all the people. See, here's what's going on. All the all woke, no joke assholes out there who've been trying to ruin our slowly.
Did you come up with that?
Yes, that is mine.
It's got to be the name of your next book.
It's on the front cover there.
Work, no joke. That's the best.
Now that we've got the coronavirus, they've all been hit with, you know, creatine now. Now they're all going 24/7 and they're so crazed that there's a coronavirus. It emanates from China. And if you mention China in the same sentence with the coronavirus, then that's a hate crime.
Yeah, except guess what? The people who are all woke, no joke, I want to see them if they're standing next to somebody who appears to be Chinese, who's coughing or sneezing or hands them a cup. I want to see what they do.
The book is called I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, Navigating Our All Woke, No Joke Culture.
By the way, I got it on good authority that chapter 3 is a chapter I will be very interested in reading.
I will play you a snippet from the audiobook in a second. First, I'll tell you about Upstart.com. Getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard. Upstart.com, revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than your credit score, offers a smarter interest rate to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. This is so important, people. If you've racked up some credit card debt and you're paying a high rate, it's really breaks your back. Let's consolidate, get a lower rate, and pay that off. It goes beyond credit score when assessing credit worthiness. They reward you based on education and job history and all the important stuff. Fast, simple, and easy to check your rate, and it won't affect your credit score. So once your loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the next business day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards and meet financial goals. Upstart, right, Gary?
That's right. See why Upstart is top-ranked in their category with a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/doubt to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/doubt.
I'm supposed to be, as we record this, I'm supposed to be at the Comedy Store tonight, which is tonight, right?
It's last night.
Or last night. It's last night?
The show comes out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, sorry. As we record, I'm supposed to go tonight. Last night, as you hear it. I kept sitting around going, it's still on at the Comedy Store, huh? It's still on. I just got a note from Matt that said Comedy Store closed down for 2 weeks. So yeah. No stand-up at the Comedy Store. Now we'll see about the Laugh Factory. So we have a chapter from the book. Now, it's the audio
book. By the way, can I tell you something about your books? Mm. You don't get it. And I don't want to just blow smoke up your ass because we're buddies and buddies don't do that. But I don't think you get enough credit for how much wisdom is in your stuff. In 50 years, we'll all be chicks. By the way, you were off. You were wrong because it was really only about, what, 5 years?
Yeah, it was about 5 years.
And almost all of your prognostications came true. So I was thinking about you nonstop. I was going to call when Tom Hanks came out, because not only were you spot on, and you can repeat your analysis because you do it better than me, not only were you spot on, but if somebody had listened to you and had short sold that night, they would have made a fortune the next day in the stock market.
Well, I appreciate it, Mark. And you know, the thing about me is I'm kind of a blue collar-y guy without a degree or a title, you know, so I think a lot of people tend to think of my folksy kind of thoughts is just that. But I've always been a clear thinker, sort of regardless of what my education level was. And I actually,
you're kind of the Mark Twain of your generation.
Well, thank you.
Without the bushy mustache.
I've always sort of thought of it as the reason I can form these thoughts is because I really don't have any formal education. When you have a formal education, you sit around and you listen to other people's thoughts, and then you use those thoughts to form your thoughts. I don't have anyone else's thoughts in my head, so they're all my thoughts. All right, so I recorded this. It's raw. It's not mixed. Gary cobbled it together. So what happens is usually Dawson engineers it. I lay it down, and then Dawson goes back and takes out all the breaths and the pauses and the mispronunciations and so on and so forth. So this is not the final product, but it's from It's Not All Good in the Victimhood, Chapter 3, and it has to do with your own client, Daniel Shaver. And then you'll have an update on that case as well after this 2-minute and 40-second audio break. My Reasonable Doubt co-host, Mark Garagos, represented the widow of Daniel Shaver, an unarmed 26-year-old man who was shot and killed by a white police officer in Mesa, Arizona. The officer was later acquitted despite video evidence. I'm sure you all saw the body camera footage. Oh, wait, you didn't, because Shaver was white. If he wasn't, MSNBC would be showing it nonstop, because it was by far the worst police killing ever. A citizen called the Mesa Police Department saying they saw someone in a hotel room with a gun. It later turned out that Shaver was an exterminator and had an airsoft pellet gun for shooting rodents. For clarity, I don't blame the person who called it in. I blame Officer Philip Brailsford, along with Sergeant Charles Langley, Brailsford's superior on the scene, who shouted confusing orders and did the exact opposite of de-escalation. After being ordered from his room and into the hallway, this poor bastard was told to lie on his stomach, sobbing and begging for his life, saying, "Please don't shoot me." Shaver, who was drunk at the time, reached to pull up his shorts because they had slipped after he was ordered to crawl on the floor of the La Quinta. Trigger-happy Brailsford unloaded 5 shots into Shaver's back, chest, and head, killing him. This wasn't an officer-involved shooting or a tragic mistake, like what sometimes gets talked about on the news. This was an execution. Despite this, Brailsford was acquitted and reinstated to the department in August of 2018, and was promptly granted retirement on medical grounds, receiving his full pension. If Shaver had been black, Arizona would be on fire like Ferguson. But it didn't fit the news narrative. Oh, and did I mention that Brailsford had "You're fucked" inscribed on the stock of his AR-15? Because one thing we can all agree on is that almost all cops are assholes. That profession attracts a certain breed of cat. The kind that likes power and is ready to wield it. They don't get into that line of work to hassle and potentially kill black people. Just people. It doesn't matter whether the people are African-American motorists giving them the lip or drunk pest control guy with a BB gun. Look at how cops outfit themselves nowadays. Every officer looks like he's hanging off a Humvee in Fallujah. RoboCop had less technology on him than your average cop does today. And there are guys jousting at medieval times wearing less armor. But the more we focus on them being racist, the less we focus on them turning into the Terminator. And that's a rough clip from the new book.
Wow. I, by the way, I have not heard this before just now. I got chills.
So
thank you.
There's an update in the
Yeah,
in
there
the
is
story.
An update. You've been, this is amazing because once again, I'm blowing more smoke up your ass. You've been saying for the past year that we've been talking about this case, that the sergeant who you just named Langley deserves quite a bit of the blame in this case. And you for escalating it, for going crazy, for just basically creating the situation. Well, there is the Langley filed a motion to dismiss, and it was denied in the district court. Now, when you're a cop, you get a special kind of favor, so to speak, under the law. You get to go and have this court of appeal, which is one court below the U.S. Supreme Court, in this case, the Ninth Circuit, because it was in Arizona. You get to have them review what the district court does, and they get to look at it and decide whether or not you get what's called qualified immunity. So they went to the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit literally ruled today, just as we're taping this. They issued the opinion. It was short. It was sweet from our standpoint, and pun intended, because Shaver's widow's name is Lainey Sweet. They ruled, they affirmed the case from down below. But I told Gary, if you watch the argument with the lawyer for Langley in the Ninth Circuit, it is one of the most legal educational videos you'll ever watch. Gary, do you have the audio?
Yeah, I do. We'll play some of it here. There's about 10 minutes and it's all excellent, but we'll play it. And Adam, you can kind of call your own out.
All right. Let me just set the table in this horrific body cam execution of Daniel Shaver. When you watch it, you assume that the person that's holding the rifle, just from the way the the way that the video is shot, you assume that it's the person who's holding the rifle in that prone position. You think they're the one who's making all the audible calls, all the commands, all the demands. But in fact, the person that's holding the gun and ultimately squeezed the trigger and killed Mark's client is not making all the audible calls. It's the commanding officer who's standing next to that person who took this scene, which could have been a 14 out of 100, and turned it into a 105. Like, he literally took a nothing, what could have been literally routine, and turned it into, he jacked it up to the point where almost anyone who was holding that rifle next to him would have squeezed the trigger by explaining he was going to kill him over and over again and panicking. I mean, in a weird way, the shooter, Philip Brailsford, in a bizarre way, was almost a victim of this guy's wild incompetence. He's like, I don't mean victim, but what I mean is Philip Brailsford, the trigger man, did not have to kill anyone that day if he had somebody competent next to him who was de-escalating the situation and making rational calls based on your police training. Instead, he got a guy who just drank 7 cups of coffee who was literally agitating the guy with the gun, almost daring him to kill the guy. And that's why, in my opinion, Langley is always more culpable than even the guy who squeezed or squoze the trigger.
Right. And so what happened here was Langley, not satisfied that the district court judge had actually had eyes and ears to watch the video, decided to take it to the Ninth Circuit, where you get 3 circuit court judges who are going to pass on whether or not Langley had escalated this situation and had and should stand trial. And then I'll kind of toss it to Gary.
All right. Those judges are Clifton, Owens, and Bennett. And the first voice you're going to hear in this clip is Langley's lawyer.
Langley is entitled to qualified immunity because he did not violate a clearly established constitutional right. Even at the pleading stage, it is plaintiff's burden to show that the rights allegedly violated were clearly established. Yet plaintiffs have not identified any controlling authority that existed as of January 2016 that would have clearly informed Mr. Langley that his conduct on the night in question violated a clearly established law.
Okay, I'm sorry, counsel.
Please.
It's not clearly established that an unarmed person who poses in the circumstances, no danger, that it's not clearly established that you can't set rules of engagement, that if you make a mistake or you move, we're going to shoot you dead. It's not clearly established that that violates the Constitution.
Your Honor, I would disagree with your characterization of the allegations.
Well, I'm reading it. Your clients, it's alleged, and again, as you say, this is at the pleading stage. If you make a mistake or another mistake, there's a very severe possibility you're both going to get shot. If you move, we're going to consider it a threat, and we're going to deal with it, and you may not survive it. I mean, maybe your client didn't say that, but that's what he's alleged to have said, right?
Yes, that's certainly the allegation.
And then the person under his command fires 5 shots and kills this person who's crawling toward your client on the floor, as alleged.
As alleged, yes.
So I don't understand how that comports with any reading of the Constitution.
Well, Your Honor, the allegations of what was commanded or warned are warnings that are constitutionally required before deadly force is issued. The suspect needs to understand the gravity of the situation, that if they don't comply with the officer's commands, that deadly force could be used. And all of the case law that is cited by the plaintiffs to establish this clearly established right, Graham, Garner, Harris, Diorly, are all cases, one, where this Supreme Court has specifically admonished this court from relying on outside the obvious case. And here, this is far from an obvious case. Mr. Langley did not use any force.
What makes you say it's far from the obvious case? I mean, if if in fact the allegations of the complaint turn out to be true and you have somebody who does not, according to the allegations, pose a threat, how is it that that's not an obvious case that a police officer is not allowed to shoot and kill him?
Two important facts.
All right, hold up.
That are alleged.
I don't know why. I keep thinking of Gabe, the time he whiffed on buying Leno Chick-fil-A. He totally sounds like, well, it was raining.
Oh, my God.
The Nuggets were introduced while I was on the phone with the representative of the Chick-fil-A franchise.
You've got three circuit court judges, none of whom anybody is ever going to say is a soft touch, sitting there saying, wait a second. And they all sound like they graduated from the Corolla School of Law, because all three of them are like, wait, what is not obvious about the fact that an unarmed guy who you've got on the floor and you're screaming at, you're going to kill him? It sounds like they had listened to you talk about this case and were asking the same question.
Well, it's patently obvious what happened. And anybody who listens to the audio of it, it is as... I mean, it really is as negligent as a position in person can a person in the position that they're in could be. I don't care if it's it's equivalent to hearing a pilot saying, you know what, this time, sweetie, make mine a double. And then you hear his hand slap the chick on the ass and go, don't worry, it's cruise control, take, you know, automatic pilot, it'll get us to Singapore, no problemo. I think it's literally like the most damning thing a person in a position of power could audibly say. A sea captain, airline pilot, or commanding officer on a crime scene. It's the most damning audio you can hear.
I've said it before. I have it probably is the worst moment I've ever spent in a courtroom was watching that videotape during the criminal trial, sitting next to Laney. And Laney, I think that was the second time she'd ever seen it. And I literally had to bear hug her because she went into convulsions as she watched it. Because obviously that's the father of her children and the man she loved. And I had to bear hug her because she went into convulsions. And I can't ever get that out of my brain. And it's the most awful thing I've ever seen. And the idea that they're sitting up there arguing that, you know, this is what he was constitutionally, basically the argument is this is what he was supposed to do. He's supposed to yell out these commands before you execute him. And these three judges are like, what? I mean, Gary played it. I said, I don't want to be the one. I don't want to be the Gloria Allred out there advocating. Listen to what actually is being argued in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal.
Well, let's just extrapolate his attorney's logic. He was perfectly reasonable in this, within the bounds of executing and performing his job. So now every time cops confronted a citizen and the citizen was unarmed and crawling on their belly on the carpet, a cop would be able to stand next to another cop with a rifle drawn and yell, we're going to kill you, we're going to kill you, we're going to kill you. Is that... Then that would be fine.
By the way, it's not even just a rifle. This is an assault weapon with, as you said, although the criminal jury never heard it, with your fucked inscribed on it. You talk about a hair trigger. It's the definition of a hair trigger. Five shots in the back.
And
in
the back. This weapon was so powerful that it went one further than Joe Biden's. What was this, 14?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this was a 15. This was like Spinal Tap going to 11. All right, let me hit ZipRecruiter, and then Mark and Gary will figure out our next subject, next case. ZipRecruiter, hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, confusing review process. Today's hiring is easy. Just go to one place, ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. Plus, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights top candidates so you never miss a great match. So if you're looking to hire or you're looking to be hired, you always go with ZipRecruiter. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. It's ZipRecruiter, right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/doubt. That's ziprecruiter.com/doubt, ziprecruiter.com/doubt. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, can I ask this, Mark? When everyone is suspending everything, so yeah, I found out moments ago, no comedy store tonight. And I think to myself, oh, come on, that's a little harsh or a little extreme. But then I think to myself, well, wait a minute. Maybe people don't want to be liable, right? Is all of this a liability thing? Is it a safety thing? Is it both? Is it exposure? Not exposure to the virus, but exposure to the law. If you keep the comedy store open tonight and 400 people show up in the main room, then what?
I was kind of going through this in my head today, just by virtue of the facts that I, as you know, I've got restaurants and hotels and things like that. And I've talked with the insurance agent, and obviously the insurance has taken a very hard line on this. Insurance is all insurance companies that I've seen so far, and I've got stacks and stacks of insurance, are taking the position that they don't have to cover any of this. And that they've specifically excluded things like this because of force majeure and pandemic language that are in policies. So most people would say, do I want to, I'm kind of on the horns of this dilemma. Do I want to have somebody come in and it later be determined that the spread of the virus happened at my location? And if I'm in a place like New York, where they've now issued an edict that as of 5 o'clock, as we're taping this today, I have to be at 50% occupancy. And if somebody says I was at 55% of occupancy, and it turns out that there was somebody who was corona infected that went into my location, and I was in violation of that statute, would I be covered? Or am I going to get sued into oblivion? I think that motivates people. I think that motivates business owners to say, I'd rather just shut down. Now, if I shut down, then what happens to all the hourly employees? I mean, I don't want, most people do not want their employees to go for naught. And what happens if I own a restaurant and the restaurant is barely eking out a 5 or 6% margin, and I'm paying a rent that's astronomical, which I am. So do I eat it? Do I just eat the rent and let people, the hourly employees, go, and then they have to go on disability? I mean, there's a lot of considerations for small business owners, and a lot of small business owners are relying just solely on their business. I mean, I've at least got assets other than the business, so that factors into it. And so I want to be considerate there. But I would say, you know, we talked about Lady Gaga's dad. You know, if he didn't have Lady Gaga, who has assets, what is he going to do in the Grand Central Terminal when he's already combating the homeless population there? Now they're telling him he can only have 50% of his occupancy. Does he want to expose himself to something that's not insurable? I doubt it.
So the rule in New York is no more than 50%, whether a restaurant or hotel or whatever it is.
Exactly. You can't have more than 50% occupancy. That takes effect. By the time you listen to this, that will be the law in New York. And so if you violate that, there's a statutory violation that probably is the premise for a lawsuit right there.
And but that's not enacted in L.A. so far, as we know it.
So far, although I'm sure that my guess is that Garcetti will wait until he can let it explode, and then we'll get some feel good lectures. Because this is one thing I've wondered. They banned events or congregations, meaning people who are assembling. I believe it's 250 or more. That's probably why the your thing got canceled today. But I wonder why, if that's the case, why is it okay for, and I'm just eyeballing it, 800 or 1,000 people in a homeless encampment to be on one block? Why is that okay? Yet it's not okay for people to be, how many, what do you think the occupancy is where you were supposed to play tonight?
Well, they had moved it. They had closed down the belly room, which is the little room upstairs, not sure why. They closed down the main room, which is just that, the main room, which probably holds 400 people, and then limited it only to the original room, which to my trained eye feels about $150.
That's right.
So,
and Mark, maybe you can clarify, but based on my careful reading of the statement from Gavin Newsom, he came out and said that we shouldn't have congregations of more than 250 people, but I've seen no actual law or edict. It's just sort of, he made this statement that we shouldn't, and everyone in California is tending to abide by that, but I haven't seen any actual enforceable anything around that.
Yeah, I haven't either. Nothing like what Cuomo or I believe de Blasio also was entering something in New York City, which is interesting to me, because if that's the case, I will guarantee you there are blocks and blocks of Skid Row in downtown L.A. and other places that are not Skid Row where there are congregations of homeless people in excess of 250. So I don't unless they think that the homeless have developed immunities that the rest of the population has not, I don't understand what they think they're doing at this point.
Well, it is kind of interesting, which is you wonder, you think of the homeless population as compromised. On the other hand, there's no peanut allergies in that group. Like, they've been living like sewer rats for 10 years, and maybe they've built a few, maybe they've built up some immunity. It'll be interesting to see how the homeless community is affected, and the rate they're affected in versus the, you know, Lily White, Lord Fauntleroy grew up in a vat of Purell group is affected by it. I think you'll find that in a weird way, the immune system is probably stronger amongst the homeless community, even if they're physically compromised. You got some Tommy John there, Mark?
I sure do. Tommy John doesn't give an F. They give three Fs. Fabric, fit, and function. Proprietary fabrics that perform like nothing you've ever worn before. They also have the famous no wedgie guarantee, comfortable stay put waistbands, luxuriously soft feather light, moisture wicking, breathable fabrics, all designed to move with you. No bunching or riding up. If you don't love your first pair, get a full refund. I'll bet you they've never had to give one because there's nobody who doesn't love them.
Who would do that?
They wouldn't. Get a full refund with their best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free. Guarantee. Shop in over 1,200 retail locations across the country, including Nordstrom stores nationwide. Give three Fs and upgrade your underwear. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. Right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
All right, you can go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows. Hopefully it's not going to get canceled by the coronavirus. And check out Uppity and the 24-Hour War and Shelby American. Go to Chassis, CHASSY.com. And let's pre-order I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, everyone. You can do that now on Amazon. Just click through our link. Mark, what do you got?
I got V Palm Springs. We're specializing this weekend in social distancing. So if you're in your room, you don't have to be 3 feet near anybody else. You can go to Prova at the Grand Central Station. The entire Grand Central Station is specializing in social distancing. Or go over to Times Square in New York. Rumor has it they're going to quarantine the entire city any moment. And we've got Engine Company 28 downtown. We're doing gangbuster business, but we may be able to slip you in. Or Mediterranean Tapas at 10E downtown as well.
And check out Rob has a podcast on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Garagos saying mahala.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.